This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, 27th of April, 2023. Markets still in a negative mood yesterday. We started selling off once again. I think part of that on the debt ceiling issue coming to a temporary head, at least, as we had McCarthy announcing, House Speaker McCarthy, the Republican, of course, announcing that he did have the votes for a slightly altered version of the Republican bill. It did go to vote and it did pass. So this does up the pressure, pressurize this whole situation around the debt ceiling. A bit ironically, perhaps, later in the session, it looks like the latest tax revenue is showing us, according to some and according to Goldman Sachs, that it's sufficiently better than expected that we could roll this issue all the way into July. So unfortunately, it looks like we're going to have to wait until July to get the situation resolved. That's because somewhere in mid-June, there's a time frame where some other tax revenues roll in, and that would extend it possibly a month or so beyond that. So no signs that Biden, of course, is willing to negotiate anything. There's no alternative bill afloat. There's no negotiations ongoing. This bill will never pass beyond the House, so we're stuck in neutral there. No major fear levels around this. We did extend the fear around those announcements yesterday, but then we sort of rewound. Yields bounced back up a little bit. And then, Peter, we have a deja vu all over again because we have a mega cap reporting after the close, and it's much better than expected, and it was Meta this time. And that's sort of helped to boost sentiment once again in late trading yesterday and into the European morning.
Yeah, it's going to be the question whether Meta is finally the company report that can turn things around, because sentiment is sour right now. The debt ceiling debate, as you correctly discussed there, and we have the First Republic Bank, that the situation deteriorated as well yesterday. We'll get back to that later. But I will come with a more company-specific viewpoints on Meta. But more broadly, I will say that what we have seen now from and communicated both by Tencent out of China, but also Meta and Alphabet, which are two global giants in the global advertising industry, is that advertising spending is surprising to the upside right now. And advertising is a leading indicator. It's the first item that you cut down. You cut down on if you're a business and you need to save money. You cut down on advertising spending, and if you feel better about the outlook and the economic activity, you turn it up, and that's what we're seeing right now. So the outlook from those two companies are in line with an expectation that economic growth is probably going to rise a little bit from here over the next 3 to 6 months. So I don't think that it doesn't really rhyme with a recession incoming, at least not judging from companies' behavior on their advertising spending.
Yeah, sounds like we need to see whether their forecasting abilities, the quality of those versus, for example, what the Fed says versus what the market is saying. So that will be interesting indeed, certainly with the market pricing those rate cuts by later this year. It's there's something that's at odds with how the market is pricing things, also the inverted yield curve, et cetera. So yeah, with the debt ceiling announcement stuff yesterday, you did see the dollar extending lower, but only in those selective pairs where there's sort of the safe haven phenomenon, running along. We have the euro dollar sort of squeezed higher, just nipping above those highs of the cycle, 110.67 or 76, whichever it was, I forget, almost hitting towards 111, but then retreating a bit and sort of back to within the range this morning. So, and of course, the ECB's expectations are for further tightening relative to the Fed's, maybe not next week, and that is really the key, I think, driver for Eurodollar, that plus the debt ceiling, whether that intensification of fears potential there, or the Fed has it on its radar. That's what has probably the market at 80% odds of a 25 basis point move next week rather than higher odds. And so the next incoming data will be important for the odds on that next week. In the meantime, it's a little bit less about a weak dollar and more about a strong euro. And you can see something like with the Australian dollar even weaker than the US dollar of late. Look at that euro Aussie chart as I show on slide 3. That has really extended aggressively, to say the least, over the last week. The yen tried to catch a bid yesterday as well because the fear levels on the debt ceiling drove yields lower. But with yields mean reverting, the yen is just going nowhere. There's just very little anticipation that new governor Katsuo Ueda will deliver something at this Bank of Japan meeting tonight. does mean the bar for a surprise is very low. So if there is a surprise, there will be a large market reaction to that. I don't see a surprise incoming, so it'll be up to external market factors and coincident indicators, I think, to get the yen moving in a big way on that Bank of Japan meeting. As we come into late Asian trading and early European trading tomorrow morning, when the press conference is usually still ongoing from the Bank of Japan. And all of that 2000 level just seems to be quite a psychological tough nut to crack here for the gold market and dollar terms, at least. What are you watching for next to get either new highs? And if we go to new highs, we'd be talking about new all-time nominal highs in gold versus the dollar, or to continue back lower through this, I think, 1950 area.
Well, I think first of all the inability to move higher, as we've seen yields move lower once again. We've seen the First Republic Bank sell off by more than 60% in 2 days has not really triggered an extension. It did just highlight a market that's still in consolidation mode. We're bumping along that the trend line, which is today coming in around the 1980 level. So far we've been holding above that. And what are we watching, looking at? Well, obviously the bank stress, if there's any further developments on that front. But I think also increasing the market wants to have confirmation that the market's very, very optimistic views on where interest rates are heading in the US from June and onwards, that they are actually correct. You can see that on the spreads and the short-end futures contracts. The June-December spread is now pricing in 75 basis point cuts within end of year. And over the next year, we're looking for close to 1.75%. The market simply needs confirmation from the FOMC next month that is the correct approach to the direction of interest rates. And if not, there could still be a deeper consolidation or deeper correction in the market. But for now, the ETF demand is picking up, so that's providing some underlying support as well.
All right, and then the crude oil market, we need to talk about this. As I was discussing on our internal call this morning, we're talking about potentially more resilient economy, Chinese demand coming back on board. There are some solid signs of that when you look at services sector activity. There's a lot of focus on travel activity out in Asia, as that has picked up tremendously. But the commodity space, we're just not seeing it, and especially oil in for a drubbing yesterday. Another big meltdown, and it more than closed that gap we've talked about when OPEC Plus announced its production cuts. So what gives? Was it the U.S. supplies data, or where are you focusing for whether this is going to plunge all the way to the lows here?
Well, it's a lot of that is simply flow driven, and I think the biggest takeaway from this is actually just to tell OPEC if you consider any surprise production announcement in the future, don't do it over a weekend, because you risk, and especially if you do it at a time where if you're cutting production as you did this time because of worry about demand, then clearly when you're suddenly creating a $5 gap in the market, which is acting as a massive magnet, that does attract short sellers. But at the same time, you squeezed a lot of fresh longs into the market in the belief that market was going to go higher, supported by OPEC production cuts. And that basically means the selling we've seen since and has both opportunistic sellers looking for that gap to close, and also increasing the long position that needed to get back out again. And the result is that we now crash below 80. That is once again attracting probably fresh momentum short sellers. Short sellers don't really care about OPEC. They care about what the price is telling them. And right now the chart is telling them that the short is probably the way that they should trade it. And they'll do that until something else happens. So we need to basically keep an eye on the fundamental data. They're not looking that promising right now. Diesel refinery margin that we have been highlighting has started to stabilize in Europe and in Asia. In the US, they're still coming down. And we also seen the prompt spread in Brent. So the spread between the first and the second month moved back into contango. We haven't seen that for quite a while. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in order to stabilize this market. But and obviously that also raised the question, is OPEC going to come in with another production cut? But I think overall, demand growth is still expected to be rising this second half. And we're almost into the second half when we look at the future deliveries. And that basically means I think we will stabilize here and eventually move back above 80. But this is part of this weakness is OPEC's own doing.
All right. Peter, Ola brought in the First Republic Bank, dropping 30% yesterday. It's down sharply over a couple of days. And I just pulled up the S&P Regional Banking ETF. I don't know if that's the best one to pull up, but it's also sort of suffering here on the lows essentially since the March collapse on Silicon Valley Bank's demise. It feels pretty negative in this space, and it just shows you that sort of lack of recovery there. I mean, you've seen sort of treasury yields recovering a bit, maybe slicing the losses in half yield and yield terms. But these regional banks are really suffering here, and I guess it is this ongoing funding story. And the concern, of course, with regional banks is that there are such a heavy presence in the commercial real estate space. I think it was 2/3 of the commercial real estate lending is in regional banks. So it just isn't it a sign of concern, or isn't your concern level quite strong as well? Just this, the way that it has done an L-shaped non-recovery here, and even looks like it might be headed lower here.
It is a concern, and I think the concern is mostly related to the fact that that what is happening is that it's lowering competition or in the U.S. banking system. It also, in the worst case scenario, the design flaws of everything we have done in terms of banking regulation since 2018 will cause the long tail of U.S. banks to die out, and that removes regional banks from the geographical footprint. And I just think that a regional bank in a certain area of any country has a bigger incentive to reinvest deposits into loans for the local communities to see them grow. It's in their own self-interest. Whereas a big bank like JP Morgan Chase, with a headquarter in New York, although I you can always argue that they have, of course, good intention for their clients, it's just they don't have the same local root in a local community to the same extent. They don't have the same incentive structure, I'm just sorry to say. And then that's also what we see in any country. I think there is a vital need for regional banks. Having said that, the opposite takeaway, or the very cynical takeaway, is that this is just a zero-sum game, right? So what you see with First Republic Bank is that, yes, they're in trouble. There's a huge mismatch on their balance sheet. But these loans are going to be taken over by large banks, and thereby the credit commitments will, at least in the short term, be carried forward by stronger balance sheets. So I'm not so sure that the net effect is that terrible necessarily on the economy. But I think it long term it reduces the competition, and I don't think it's good for rural areas of the U.S. to lose a lot of regional banks. So that's of course the negative side. But whether this is a systemic crisis for the banking industry, I don't think. I think it's more pockets of risks, and a lot of it can be managed. And that's at least my viewpoint.
Yeah, and then the base case is that as these banks, one of the reasons these banks are suffering is the rising funding costs as people are piling money into money market funds. One of the metrics I looked at, I think it's around $800 billion rise in money market funds that we've seen since the March turmoil there. Anyway, let's get back to the stocks to watch today. We mentioned Meta at the top of the program. Really a strong report after hours, and the shares really rose sharply. So take us through what you're seeing with Meta and your other stocks on watch today.
Yeah, so Meta was up 12% in extended trading. They beat on their advertising revenue, and the outlook for Q2 was also significantly above where the street estimates were. So although we're coming from very low growth figures because a lot of things changed. We had a big hangover in 2022 in the online advertising space. Pricing was under pressure, etc. A lot of factors that are negative, and also rising interest rates. That's why multiple factors hitting the Meta share price there. But it all turned around in Q4 last year, and we're beginning to see the fruits of that turnaround process that Mark Zuckerberg has started. I think the only negative thing I would say, because I already talked about the advertising space and why I think it's actually a positive macro indicator, unless, as you say, that they are horrible at forecasting, which could very well be the case, and time will tell that. The bad thing about Meta's results was that they didn't really, or he, because he's the king of the company, he controls it. So Mark Zuckerberg, he didn't really scale back, I think, enough on investments, and they kept their current investment levels in their metaverse, the virtual labs, and I think that's a mistake. So I don't think that that could still be a headwind, I think, for the company medium term. I don't see any uptake in that part of the business at all, not relative to what it should perform or what it should deliver in order to move the share price. So this is companies that is still relying on Instagram, the old Facebook network, and WhatsApp to drive revenue, and it's still an advertising business, whatever he wants it to be otherwise. And They also said Meta that they're going to implement ChatGPT like AI systems, whether they will license any technology from OpenAI or they will develop their own internal large language models. If I'm sure they probably already have something in the making, but they are going to roll that out across their across the platforms. So and they were also striking this very positive tone about that, just like Microsoft. Another technology company that has that already weeks ago reported their preliminary results, and that's also why the market is sort of very calm. But Samsung is out with more than their preliminary sales figures. They're reaffirming their long-term growth outlook for chips this year, and they're reiterating their capital expenditures again. As I said the other day, something doesn't rhyme with what the companies are, you know, are projecting versus what we're seeing in the macro indicators. This is a company that, again, is just, you know, keeping their investment levels despite macro indicators, some at least, some has deteriorated. And they see a demand recovery in memory chips in the second half of the year, which, if Samsung, again, is correct in their forecasting abilities or can forecast, then that means that consumer electronics, Apple, etc., will begin to see improving figures as we come into the second half of the year. And then Total Energy, which is the French oil and gas major, they saw a pretty significant beat here in Q1, both on revenue and EBITDA. They also confirming their CapEx level. So despite, you know, all the all the talks we've had over the oil price this year, from all the side, they maintaining their capital expenditures levels. Again, another company that is not cutting back on its intentions.
All right, and then a heavy earnings load today. Amazon is the one huge mega cap reporting, but German chemical giant BASF also on tap, and then Intel and Caterpillar. I don't know what you want to focus on there.
Oh, there's so much to focus on, John. I think this is the biggest earnings day we have today. BASF has already reported in the German session. They are disappointing a little bit. They are down, down a couple of percent as we speak right now. On the other hand, we had UPS disappointing the other day, but then another logistics giant, DSV, here out of Denmark, is up. It's up 2.5% in Copenhagen trading, so they're not disappointing the market. And then if you look ahead in the U.S. session, the five big names, Amazon, Eli Lilly, MasterCard, Intel, and Caterpillar. I think Caterpillar from a macro perspective is interesting because it's tied to construction, which is tied to interest rates. And I've just highlighted here on slide 7 with the red rectangle there, you can see the expectations there for year-on-year growth to decline. And actually by Q4, the expectation is the Caterpillar will begin to have a negative top line growth there. So surely interest rate, they have an impact not only on banks, but also on construction and construction and loan demand, of course. And Amazon is the big one. They have really been a very different story during the pandemic with Amazon. Too high cost, too much investment, completely misread the pandemic. They're suffering from that right now, but they are also cutting cost. So hopefully we'll see a turnaround and an improved outlook from Amazon, because the U.S. consumer is still hanging in there, and hopefully that's also something we're going to see from MasterCard. Two quick comments as well. Eli Lilly focus on their upcoming competing drug against Novo Nordisk Wegovy in obesity treatment. So we'll be watching that, of course. Any news or commentaries about when they expect an FDA approval? And then Intel, the faltering U.S. semiconductor company, former giant, been overtaking in terms of size and market value, at least by NVIDIA. Can they get back into the game? It seems like there's a lot of hope among the U.S. government that, you know, Intel can be this general purpose chip maker with a foundry business going forward. But they need to get up to speed very fast, I think, if that's going to succeed.
Okay. Couple of interesting data points out of the U.S. today, if we roll forward to the macro calendar on slide 8, and that would be the weekly claims. We're in a range, I think it's 228 to just below 250K over the last 7 weeks. So if we're breaking the range to the upside, that could, I think, start to tilt the Fed odds a little bit if we get a couple other confirming indicators, maybe some weak GDP price data, for example, although this is always revised a lot. But we are getting the first Q1 GDP estimate today and the associated numbers with that. And then tomorrow, the PCE inflation. So those are two important data points together with next week's ISMs ahead of the Fed meeting on Wednesday. There's a 7-year auction. The 5-year auction yesterday was quite strong. And do note, if you're a yen trader, you need to be aware, you did have the Bank of Japan meeting on your radar. It is up overnight in the Asian session. And just a reminder, go back and have a listen to, I believe it was Friday's podcast with Stane Jakobsen. You can roll back into the podcast list talking about this G7 meeting in Japan and the importance of some of the Lagarde speech that was delivered there, and hints that Biden is set to deliver something pretty significant on U.S. investing into China, and a significant policy shift there could actually have broad market implications. So have that on your radar as well. For now, that's a wrap. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.